Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. I'm back live in the studio after a two-week hiatus. Last week, I was in Denver for the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group meeting, and I called in to talk with you about the book that Doug Hughes and I put together called Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. Thank you so much for all the support you're giving us. It's a resource for adults ages 50 and older, getting a little internet activity. Some of the free books we gave away last week, we're getting a lot of momentum. We appreciate it very, very much. But I'm back. I'm excited. Next week, Ed Slott will be my guest on the show, so we'll be talking about all kinds of tax law, some IRA distribution strategies, things you definitely need to know about, and they're very, very practical. You know, when I was in Denver last week, I promised to tell you and report if I made it back safely after my very first Uber drive. You remember that? If you were listening last week, I was getting ready to take an Uber out to a friend of mine's that lives 17 miles outside of Denver. Now, for those of you that don't know what an Uber is, it's basically like a car service, an online car service. You press an app, and it tells you exactly the make and model of the car. The driver gives you a picture, gives you a fare estimate. So one of the younger guys, of course, in the group, I said, hey, can you show me how to use this? So he got me all hooked up. You put your credit card information, you press a button. He said, he'll be here in 2 minutes. So they said, your Uber's arrived. Well, I get into a 2014 black Cadillac Escalade. The driver's name was Anthony. He was dressed very nicely. Car, of course, spick and span, as they say. Two bottles of water, candy in the back. He drives me 17 miles outside of Denver to visit my friend on Thursday night. It was $21. Now, that's not the best part. The best part was, because it was my first Uber drive, or ride, I had a $20 coupon, so it cost me $1. Now, on the way back, I did the exact same thing. 5 minutes later, a Chrysler 300 picks me up, brings me back. That ride back was about $20 as well. So then I'm hooked. I mean, I'm completely addicted to Uber. So I was so excited about Uber. I was telling some, we were at dinner, and I was telling some friends about Uber, and it started to sprinkle a little bit. Don't worry about it. I'm going to get an Uber. I'm going to get an Uber. And finally, as they shook me to my senses, they're like, David, the hotel's across the street. We don't need an Uber. But I'm addicted to it. I'm a huge believer. I don't know about it locally. I've kind of pressed it a few times. We don't have very many cars running around Bloomington yet. But when you're in Denver, Dallas, any of the big cities, I mean, Uber's the way to go. So there's my testimony. I told you if I made it back alive on my first Uber drive, I would let you know all about it. Hey, today is the investment show. So Rod Holloway, the equity portfolio manager of CFCI, will be joining me live here in the studio. Before he joins me, let's talk a little bit about the week's news. Of course, Fed's Yellen says equity valuations might be a little high, warning of potential dangers. The Fed Reserve Chairperson Janet Yellen on Wednesday pointed to higher valuations in stock market prices and said the central bank needs to keep a close tab on on the non-bank lending sectors. A little worried about that. Yellen was answering questions from the International Monetary Fund manager at the Finance and Society Conference. She says, I would highlight that equity market valuations at this point are generally quite high, and there's potential dangers out there. What happened in the markets? Well, they sold off a little bit that day, but boom, they were right back to where they were the next day. U.S. stocks advanced on Thursday. The S&P added about a half a point, so did the Dow. You've heard us talk about this. 401k savings plan rates of 3% are not doing the job. When companies with 401k retirement plans offer to enroll newer hires automatically, many default the contribution rate at 3%. But why not 4, 5, or 6%? We're big proponents of that. Less than 22% of large companies surveyed by Towers Watson even provided 401k participants with a suggestion about how much to save. Of the companies that did, 39% recommended 10% or more. Experts say, like me, at least 15% is more like it. While few plans are dare to set default rates that are very high, some are moving into the 4, 5, 6% range or offering up some automatic escalators. A few use 8%, and at least one company I ran across, Google, set it at 10%. If your plans enrolled at you at 3%, there's a reason. It's not a very good one. It was used by an example that the government gave years ago. Aon's Hewitt's director of retirement research said that the other common reason is plans mimic their peers. So listen, folks, if you're in a plan that's offering automatic enrollment at 3%, you got to boost it up. You can always take it back. but you need to boost it up because you're in a yo-yo economy. You're on your own. You've got to save more than that to make it. Mary Beth Franklin, friend of the show, also gave us a killer quote for the back of today's Guide to Retirement Planning. Wrote in Investment News this week, missed Social Security claiming opportunity cost person more than $29,000. Now, Mary Beth answers questions from listeners and people that read her stuff, but she also answers a lot of questions from financial advisors. So Mary Beth received an email from a financial advisor who would like to remain anonymous, and you'll know why in a second. He's from Salt Lake City, and he was facing a situation. He said to her, I thought I knew a lot about Social Security, but I learned a new and costly, about a $29,100 lesson 2 weeks ago, the advisor wrote to her in an email. He says his mother-in-law is a widow and is turning 66 in June. She went to the Social Security office about a month ago to make all the necessary preparations to start receiving her full survivor benefit when she turned 66. But during the appointment, the Social Security counselor asked whether she realized that she could have been filing and receiving her own reduced retirement benefit when she was 62 and then receive her full retirement benefit, her survivor benefit, without any reduction at age 66. Of course, he said that this made my mother-in-law sick to her stomach, and it makes him even sicker, given that she missed out on 4 years of retirement planning benefits. So the advisor asked Mary Beth, is this widely known that a widow has the option of collecting a reduced retirement benefit first without a reduction of a survivor benefit later? He says, this one was new to me. And of course, she says, yeah, it's common knowledge that a person can claim their benefit without affecting their widow's benefit. And then she responded by saying, you can find all the details in my ebook. Just go look. It's $20. Check it out. It's online. We write about it in our book as well. The survivor benefit is worth 100% of what the deceased worker was collecting or was entitled to collect at the time of death. The advisor also asked if there was any way his mother could recoup the lost benefits. Unfortunately, Social Security does not pay retroactively unless you're at full retirement age. So let's say, you know, you are 66 and a half and you go in, you could get a check back to 66, but that's about it. You know, we have a situation right now where a person has a pretty nice claiming record themselves. But at age 60, when she retired, she took the widow's benefit, a reduced benefit of her deceased spouse. Her benefit will probably delay all the way till 70, because even at 66, when she could flip to her own benefit, we're not going to. We're going to let that thing roll up 8% per year all the way to 70 and then ride it off into the sunset. So if you are deceased, or if you're deceased, then don't call me, but if you have a spouse that's deceased, or if you're divorced, or if you're married, or whatever, there's all kinds of claiming strategies out there for you. So this financial advisor, I'm sure Thanksgiving will be terrific. We had a situation, I remember, on my wife's father. My wife's mother has been gone since 1994, so when he retired from the county, I helped him fill out his retirement paperwork, and this was 15 years ago. And if you work for the county, you have a pension, you can select life only, which makes sense if you're single, or you can have some guarantees, and we picked the five-year guarantee. So 5 years guarantee, life or life, whichever is longer. Well, I remember this like it was yesterday. He said, I'm going to have to start cutting back because next month is my last retirement check. I said, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, it's 5 years. You said 5 years. I said, if I selected 5 years, you should never invite me back to Christmas, Thanksgiving, and demand that I divorce your daughter right now. Well, fortunately, we did check the right box, and he's still collecting those benefits today. So happy story at the end of the day. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk investments. Hot Rod Holloway is in the house. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. It is the investment show. We try to do it the first show of every month. Next week, Ed Slott, the country's IRA distribution expert, will be joining me live. And if you haven't heard Ed, you're in for a real treat next week as he joins me here on the big show. Joining me this week is Rod Holloway, friend of the show, man of the radio. He's on the Glass in the Morning show on Mondays and Fridays, and then comes on the show on a quite regular basis, of course, our equity portfolio manager at our office. And Rod, you know, as we kind of talk about investments, and I was digging through my notes over here, I've just tucked them away by mistake. First quarter GDP came back, looks like maybe went was a grounding halt, but you know, last year we had a big contraction in GDP the first quarter. I know we had a cold winter again, and we had the shipping ports that were shut down for a while. The revisions are going to come out. It might show a contraction. I guess the big question is, is there anything really to worry about this early in the game?
No, it doesn't appear so. I mean, everything that we're seeing in economic data that has come out both prior to the GDP release and then stuff since the GDP release does not show that we have any sort of a major contraction going on in the economy outside of this one quarter blip. And you pointed out many of the things that affected that, the West Coast port shutdown, the extremely harsh winter, and especially the harshness in the winter for the southern folks. You know, I mean, you start getting snow and ice down in Tennessee and Georgia and those places like they had this year, they're just not equipped for it. Not only are they not used to driving in it because they don't ever get the experience of driving in it, they don't have the cities and counties don't have the equipment to do anything with it. You know, they don't have big piles of sand and salt sitting at the highway department and the city department ready to go out and dump it.
Because, even if they did, they wouldn't have the trucks to take them out.
Yeah, they don't typically have that. They don't have the plows. I mean, obviously, over the years, they've added a little bit here and there because once in a while they do get that. But they got hit a little bit harder this year. And then, of course, the East Coast, yeah, they're used to snow, but there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do when it starts piling up two feet, 3 feet. You know, I don't know what the final total was for some of those areas, but you know, cars were buried and people had to climb out windows just to get out of their house because they were snowed in and their doors were blocked shut. So there were a lot of extenuating factors that made that GDP number not look so sharp, but nothing else is signaling that's a sign of the future or a trend that we're getting ready to see.
The Fed's saying no to interest rate increases quite yet. That seems to continue to be pushed down the road. What does that mean for the average person out there, whether rates go up or down, Rod?
Really nothing. The biggest impact probably it has is on mortgages. You know, it tends to keep the mortgages down a little bit, but that's not by itself. Of course, a lot of that is also the demand of treasuries because of the mortgages are typically priced pretty closely to what's going on in the 10-year treasury.
You know, they're going to affect the overnight borrowing between banks, and the capital markets will affect the 10-year rate. And with the global demand for fixed income, even our good friend Scott Minard at Guggenheim, back on April 20th, according to By the Numbers, said that he thinks the 10-year could get that back down into the ones.
Yeah. Well, demand's huge, especially globally. I mean, you look at it. Okay, Germany is considered the industrial economic powerhouse in Europe over there. Well, guess what? You had to pay them to buy their government debt there for a while. I think it did just recently flip barely positive. So globally, what are people going to do? Are they going to pay Germany to hold their money for 10 years and then give it back later? Or are they going to come over here and
earn
something? Right. We've had a bit of a bump up here in the last week in that 10-year, and we're at like 2.25 now. But regardless, whether we were down at 180, we're at 2, that's far better than you paying a government to hold on to your money for them.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about, can the market sustain this rally we've had over the last 6 years for the most part? You know, with Janet Yellen coming out and warning that stock prices were a little bit hefty and that there's some dangers looming. We're going to talk about that. Also, later in the show, some risk management strategies, things you can do to protect yourself in case the market does head in the wrong direction. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, since the bottom of the last bear market in 2009, the S&P has returned over 200%. But we've had some bumps in a row. We haven't experienced a serious 10% or more correction since 2011. Of course, some believe we're well overdue for a pullback. Others think there's a brighter look on market performance. And, you know, since history never repeats itself exactly, we don't know exactly where we're headed. But, Rod, you know, I know that some people do believe we're well overdue, and I think there's good reason for people to believe that, but at the same time, there's good reason to think we have a bright future ahead.
Sure. Well, I think the thing is we have to separate here the difference between a correction and a bear market. So, yeah, we're long overdue a 10% correction. Now, like many people will tell you, while historically it's been very common that during bull markets you have more than one 10% pullback or correction, there's nothing written in law that says you absolutely have to. Sometimes you can correct, and the bulls can rebuild energy just by going sideways. What we've seen in this bull market is 4 to 5%, and the buyers come back in and start buying. We've had a couple that have approached 6 to 8%. I think we had one indice, and I think it may have been the Dow Jones, that barely touched 10% intraday but didn't close there. Versus a recession, a recession is a prolonged downturn in the market. And you have to understand, recessions are typically created off of economic decline, a contraction in the economy. They are done off of potentially bubbles bursting. When you look back at the tech bubble bursting, things were dramatically overvalued. So that kind of caused what happened in early 2001 and 2002. None of those are on the horizon right now. And of course, the black swan event, like our financial crisis in 2008, which then pushed us into a recession, different things like that. Right now, we don't have any of those factors that would push us into a bear market. So correction, yeah, sure, we're overdue for a 10% because we haven't had one in a long time. But at the same time, there's nothing in the math or the statistics that says you really have to have one to have a healthy market. You have to have pauses, but pauses can be sideways. They can be 4% down. They don't have to be 10% that everybody has gravitated to.
Of course, Wednesday, Janet Yellen comes out and says, prices are a little overvalued, that people need to have caution. What happened? The market went up on the very next day after she made those announcements. I was mindful of the old 1996 comments from then Chairman Greenspan when he said, irrational exuberance in the market. That was in 1996, and guess what? 4 more years of market rally before we had the big tech bubble burst then. So, these can be alarming comments and get you a little bit shaken, but you have to look at the fundamentals. And you mentioned this, Rod. Yeah, current valuations, a little bit salty, not out of the norm. We've seen these before, but when you look at forward earnings expectations, the PEs are actually quite in line with historical averages.
Well, I think that's the thing. It'd be interesting for her to say they are highly overvalued. Mm-hmm. What's highly to her? Is that a couple of percent over norm, or what does that really mean to her? And that's different for everybody, because if you look historically, the S&P 500 price to earnings multiple runs about 16.6, so let's call it 16.5. That's your historical average.
And let's explain what that means. When we talk about 16 times earnings, that means you're paying 16 times earnings for that stock, if that makes any sense. So if it has, a $10 earnings, you're paying 16 times that, or $160 for that share of stock. So, right. That means that you're paying up for earnings, and that's what she was talking about.
Because when you're buying a stock, you're expecting the earnings to continue to grow and them to have additional profits in the future, and therefore
you're betting on the come.
Right, and therefore the price of the stock will go up. So historically, we're a little bit over that. We're sitting right now at about 17.5, 17.7 on current year's earnings. You mentioned before that forward earnings look a little better. So based on 2016 earnings estimates right now, you're sitting at about 15.4 roughly in that area. I don't consider that wildly overvalued. If you look back at the 99 tech bubble, in which no doubt we were dramatically overvalued in many stocks, you were setting up at almost a 30 price to earnings multiple, 29 and some change. So to me, being under 18 and sitting at 17 is a far cry from being anywhere near the overvaluations we had there. Now, break it down to individual stories. Yeah, no doubt there are individual companies out there right now that are overvalued. We saw it for a while, and that's cooled off. We saw it in the social media game makers there for a while, Farmville and those, Candy Crush, those types of games. All you had to do is have a hot game on Facebook and then go public, and man, your stock just soared. But then people would step back and go, well, wait a minute here. They've got one free game on a social website. Is this really sustainable? That's yet to be seen. Those guys are still out there and moving around. They're not trading at the lofty valuations they were when they first went public. So, yeah, individual stories, it's there. Broad market, we are not dramatically overvalued. We are by no means undervalued either. We are fairly valued to slightly high, but if we do have earnings growth, then that means in the future we still have some room to grow.
Well, and that's a general statement based on all equities out there in the S&P 500, and we're going to talk about this when we come back, maybe it becoming more of a stock picker's market because there are some values out there. And, you know, like I said before, history does not repeat itself exactly, and we don't believe that it's useful to worry about what might be around that corner lurking. Instead, focus on creating these personalized strategies. You've heard us talk about this, purpose-driven portfolios that pursue your goals, and then make prudent adjustments as conditions warrant. And we suggest you do that. And avoid running to different things based on headline risk, for sure. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about indexes versus the stock pickers market, and then get right into some sustainable risk management strategies, all in the Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, the new book out that Doug and I have, but things that you can act on right now, right in your 401k. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. It is the investment show. Next week, Ed Slott, the IRA distribution expert, will be live on my radio show. He's going to call in from Manhattan. Of course, Ed is a CPA. He would call himself a recovering CPA. But when I tried to get him on during tax season, I think he really is a CPA still. So he couldn't do it then, and now he's on next Thursday. So you won't want to miss it. It'll be a tremendous show. Rod Holloway's in studio with me talking investments, and we're moving on to risk management strategies. And again, if you want to pick up our book, please do so. Head over to any major online retailer. It's called Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's a resource for adults ages 50 and over, but really, you know, if you just want to know basic stuff on how to manage risk with your investments, it's a great book to pick up. Rod, I guess when we talk about managing risk, the word I grew up on in this business was creating an all-weather portfolio. Now, that basically means a couple of different things, you know, having things that zig when other things zag. But Rod, having an all-weather portfolio for the last couple of years may have created a big disappointment for you relative to just having everything out in the S&P 500 index, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, last year's a perfect example. You have a lot of people that were in growth strategies as far as mutual funds and an allocation that spread them across multiple asset classes and cap sizes. Well, small cap didn't do very well last year. International, in most cases, were negative returns last year. So if you had that broadly diversified growth or aggressive growth portfolio in which you had a little small, a little mid, a little large, a little international, yeah, some alternatives in there, you didn't do very well if you were comparing that portfolio to the S&P 500 because those areas did poorly. But as you talk about many a times, what feels like the natural thing to do at the end of the year was go dump that small cap and load up on the large cap because that's what did better last year and your small cap did poor, and wow, that was a bad investment. Let's get out of it and move on. But year to date, who's winning that battle? Well, it's small cap this year over large cap. Early in the year, who knows if that will be sustained, but that's the whole reason for that broad diversification and that all-weather portfolio, because then you're not trying to pick when are small caps going to do better than large caps or vice versa.
And this might be the year we finally move from indexing being the best way to go to professionally managed stock picker kind of funds. But we've always been a big believer in that you should probably have a little bit of both.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, once again, just like we talked about a second ago, hard to predict when small outperforms large or large outperforms small. It's hard to predict when it's a good stock picker's market and when it isn't. There are signs that you can see out there. At the end of the financial crisis, when the stock market started to take off in March of 2009, that most definitely was not a stock picker's market. And it's kind of obvious because every single stock out there was undervalued, no matter how poorly run the company was.
Well, I think that's your answer right there. When you go back and look at the beginning of the financial crisis, the S&P 500 average valuation or price to earnings ratio, when it's low, very low historically, probably just go with the index. But now, when it's historically a little bit high, we might be shifting to someone digging through the rubble looking for those values,
sure,
as opposed to just throwing it into an index.
And even along those lines, like we talked about, predicting it for the last couple of years, 2013, 2014, many analysts have come out and said, hey, we think this is the year that you're going to have to pick the right stocks, not just be in stocks. And of course, it has been very difficult to be. When the market does 30% like it did a couple of years ago,
right,
you know, it is hard to pick individual stocks that do better. It's not hard to pick them that maybe do as well, but to actually beat the S&P 500 when it's doing that well can be difficult. But yeah, it looks like at least in the early phases of this year that maybe that stock picker's market has arrived.
Well, you know, if you say something long enough, eventually you'll be right. You know, as we talk about risk management strategies, and we're going to get right into that, we're going to talk about the one that's not a risk management strategy, Hot Rod, and that is timing.
Yeah. Good luck if you've ever done it and you felt like you did it right and you can do it again. Your batting average is probably going down. It's just not something that can consistently be done. There are plenty of people who get lucky and do time it right, and they'll explain to you, here were all of my reasons why I felt this was the time to make this move, and it all sounds great. It sounds very educated, but then try and do that again in the future, and typically it just doesn't work out that well. So yeah, timing is not the way to manage risk.
Let's talk about one that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, diversification. We talked about active versus passive. And when you rebalance, you're doing exactly the most counterintuitive thing that comes to us naturally as humans. As Rod just said, this did good, this did bad. You're telling me you want me to sell good and buy bad? Yes, unfortunately, that's exactly what you do in rebalancing. And had you done that, and we talked about it here on the show in December, heading this year, you'd be glad you did.
Yeah. Rebalancing is one of the best tools out there, especially for the retail guy, the guy who's in his 401k, in which typically it's pretty easy. You know, your online system usually allows you to pretty easily go in and say, hey, rebalance back to my original allocation. It's the best way to do what just doesn't feel like it's the right thing to do, which is sell the high stuff, buy the low stuff. The only thing with the rebalancing that I caution people, don't overdo it.
Right.
You
exactly.
know, Once a year at most is enough. Sometimes you can even let it run a little bit longer than a year. But if you start trying to rebalance every quarter or semi-annual, the problem is you don't allow the winners to run and really reap the benefits of the success you're having with those winners.
And diversification, when we talk about that, you know, we're talking about stocks and bonds, real estate, cash, commodities, but then within the stocks, big, small, mid. On the fixed income side, you have high yield, you have short duration, you know, you have all these different things. And I think that's where you can get a little bit of assistance with from an advisor on how to make those selections. Because, you know, we know generally when you look back in history, when you first come out of a recovery, you know, what tends to do best. And then as you start to mature in a recovery, what tends to do a little better. And you might, slowly tilt things here or there. We talked about Europe and how maybe there's an opportunity there as they started their bond buying program the way we did back in and during our QE time, and we thought, well, maybe you should put a little bit there. Well, that appears to be a pretty good move as well. So again, international got slaughtered last year or even the year before that. You're thinking, I'm out. Well, maybe not. Maybe you should have rebalanced back to it. Let's talk a little bit about dollar cost averaging, Rod. I mean, that's something that everyone who has a retirement account through work is just doing, even though they may not even know they're doing it.
Yeah, it's a good thing because, once again, similar to that auto rebalance and forcing yourself to do what feels uncomfortable to do, here with the dollar cost, you're not timing the market. You're not trying to figure out, gosh, do I buy today? Do I buy in a week? What about next month? You just dollar cost average. Now, what I've told people that have asked here recently because the market's had a good run, you know, gosh, should I ease in? Should I wait for a pullback? If you're completely out of the market, now, you don't want a dollar cost average to get back in when you've got a good market going and you feel like you've missed something. Go ahead and dump some of it in and then start dollar cost averaging with the remaining dollar. So that way, if there is never a pullback, you're participating in the market continuing to go up with some of your money versus setting 100% on the sidelines or putting just a fraction in every single month and taking a year or two before you're 100% in. Get some of those dollars in and then start easing the rest of it in.
You know, I have a few folks that have retired this year, have lump sum benefits from their pension, and, you know, you dump the equity portion right in, or your dollar cost average. Like you said, put a little bit in, but average that in. My suggestion is, my thought is, 6 to 9 months, average that in. If you look at the average contraction time, that's about where it is. There's no magic to this. But, yeah, rather than dump it all in, maybe you average it in. Also, if you're a bond person, an income guy, and this is not in your 401k, maybe staggering your fixed income maturity so that you always have bonds that are coming due every year or two so that you can place those strategically wherever they need to be placed. That's an old tried and true. And then the other thing is the use of some of these investment products that are out there. There's some pretty cool investment products. You have to go through an investment professional to get them. There's things that can protect you greatly with giving you opportunity. And unfortunately, folks, we got to take a quick break, but that's my hook to keep you on to the next segment. We'll be right back to talk about some of the investment products that are out there, but I need to educate you about them, show you the risk of those and the pros and the cons so you're a well-informed person. Again, all of this is in the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. I said last week, Rod, when I was calling in from Denver, when we were going through the book, and I'm saying, that's in there, and you're old enough to remember this too. I said, it's like the ragu sauce. It's in there. And I was the only one that laughed, but I was also by myself in a hotel room. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of these investment products that are out there. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You're Running with David Hayes. You know, a lot of things were kind of created out of the financial crisis. When equity markets plummeted and fixed income markets went down, although they rebounded pretty quickly, some pretty interesting things kind of came out of that. Now, some of the things we're going to talk about, they've been around longer than that. It's just they become, I think, more utilized since then. And Rod, the first thing I wanted to talk about with folks is structured notes. Can just walk us through what a structured note is and what it can do.
Yeah, a structured note, it's a product put together by financial institutions, the large ones, the banks. Some of them will actually even have be labeled CDs and have FDIC insurance protection along with them. But basically what it is they are protecting principal in many cases. That's the original one that came out. There are many other varieties now. But basically, they're telling you, hey, your principal is protected, and then we're going to allow you to participate in the upside of some market. Now, of course, the most common one in the very beginning, just the S&P 500. So you have a structured note. It's principal protected. So regardless of what happens between, let's say it's a three-year structured note, and principal protected right now, you're probably not going to find a 3 year.
No,
you're looking
like
at 5
seven.
To 8 year, yeah. And that has to do with low interest rates. But anyway, it's 3 years. So no matter what the S&P 500 does from the start of that structured note to the maturity of that, they're guaranteeing that you get your principal back. So if you put $10,000 in, now of course that's based on the financial institution still being alive and kicking on the back end of that for them to give you your money back.
Now, but they may not give you all of the S&P 500 over that 5 year period of time. They're going to cap you, but
exactly.
You're going to participate in it with full FDIC or bank backing protection.
Yeah. Great point, Dave, because really the inner workings of this, and we're not going to go into it in great detail, is basically they're going to go out and they're going to buy some options on the index that they're benchmarking it to. So the S&P 500, the remaining amount of that money is going to go into bonds. Mm-hmm. That's where the principal protection comes in. Well, two things right now are kind of working against you in that area, which is, you know, number one, you're not getting a lot of bang for your buck on volatility and option pricing. So when you get moves that benefit you in options, you're not getting that extra kicker because of volatility, which figures into the pricing of that. And then interest rates are so low, it takes a lot more of the dollars being invested in that structured note to go into bonds, meaning they have less dollars to put into the options. So yeah, you get capped. You know, and that's what I try and tell people. There's nothing wrong with it. The problem I have with some of the people who the wholesalers that are selling it, of course, you know, they play it off as though, hey, you want market returns without the risk, we'll do this. You're not going to get market returns.
Well,
you're going to be capped, but it is a nice place for someone who's not quite retired yet, maybe is a little nervous of the bond market because of the low interest rate environment and fearing increasing rates coming up. Maybe it's an area you park some of what will be future fixed income dollars to generate income in retirement to protect the principal and hope that you get a positive return out of the indices. Because if the market does 12-15%, you aren't going to do 12 or 15%. You are going to be capped.
And also, you know, folks need to know that these things aren't really that liquid. I mean, they can be, and they do not participate in the dividends as well. So those are
It's not an income producer. You can't produce it. Typically, you can get out, but as with many things that have a beginning and an end date, you're subject to potentially taking a loss on principal when you get out of that thing early. And then, of course, we talked principal protection. They've become extremely creative. There are now what are called buffer notes, which the first 10% down, you are still not participating in that loss, and then after the market's down 10%, any additional loss after that, you participate there. So if you feel pretty comfortable with where the market's at, maybe it's had a bit of a dip and you jump into that and say, you know, we're down 10. I can't see it going down much more than another 10. Then maybe you look at a buffer note, because once again, with all of these types of things, a buffer note will probably give you a little more upside than a principal protected note would right now. So a higher cap than the principal protected note.
Yeah, for everything you get, you give something up.
Exactly. And the other thing is right now the buffer notes and those types of things, typically you can get those in 2-3 year type products versus, as I said earlier, the principal protected note, because of just the environment we're in right now and the low interest rates, it's tough to get anything principal protected that's worth buying that isn't 5 to 8 years in length.
Yeah, so you have buffer notes. You have, and on the structured note side, you can buy just about any type of structured note you want. It could be with gold. It could be a basket of stocks. It could be just about anything. Something I know is sold a lot to folks is the fixed indexed annuities. That's actually an insurance product that gives you participation in the equity markets with full protection on the downside. The one unique feature about a fixed indexed annuity is that if the market went down 10% and you had $100,000 in the product, you still have $100,000 at the end of the year. And then the next year the market goes up 10%. Well, you're going to participate in that, because every time the market goes up, you participate. Now, at what rate? 40-50%. And then sometimes they have long surrender periods, so they're not real liquid. But for a long-term investor that's extremely risk-averse, it is kind of a tweener between the way stocks would act and the way your bonds would act. So it could be a nice diversifier. Sometimes they offer income benefits and things like that as well. But in all of these things, I mean, you have to understand, it's always easier to get into something than out of something. And that's true with all of these structured notes, buffer notes, fixed index annuities, anything that's kind of a product. And if it can't be explained easily, don't get into it. If you can't explain it to your mom, even if she doesn't understand it, but if you can't explain it to her, don't get into it. Because, Rod, some of these are really goofy. They say, if my left eye winks at the right time, and the S&P does just this, and the weather acts like that, then you get this. And for me, that's a little too confusing. Yeah. The devils are in the details of these things.
Exactly. You know, you have to understand that as they start adding many bells and whistles, whether it's in the structured products field or it's in the indexed annuity field, the more bells and whistles they're adding, typically it's a marketing thing. Uh-huh. You know, the company behind it is saying, oh, okay, we need to attract more dollars to this product, so I bet if we throw this on here and then add this to it, it'll sound more appealing.
And for folks listening, we've learned this the hard way. It's not because, you know, we're smarter than everybody else. I've been doing this 21 years. I've bought revertibles. I've bought it all. And it sounded so good, and then until it wasn't. So some of these worked out terrific. There's no question about it. We were buying these steepener notes that had these great big coupons, and if this did that, and, you know, it's kind of hard to, but some worked out great, some not so great. So this is from experience. Between Rod and I, we have about 40 years together here, combined experience. So, Rod, we're not trying to be sort of righteous in our comments here and criticizing people that maybe have not explained these right. We just want people to be cautious and aware.
Yeah, oh yeah. And when I say about explaining it, typically it's not coming from the advisor, because they're typically giving you the best advice on the knowledge and the understanding they have. It's typically more coming from the company that's promoting it and what the marketing department is selling, because normally the marketing department doesn't tell you what the worst case scenario is. They tell you what the best case scenario is and how that works. So that's the area where you have to be cautious of all the flashy marketing that goes with it, and understand that, you know what, if it sounds too good to be true,
sometimes it
just may be.
Yep. Hey, we're going to take another break. Unfortunately, I'm not going to get into the risk management strategies for people in retirement taking income, so I'm going to boot that to next week, because Ed Slott will be on the show, and he being the IRA distribution expert and tax guru, according to the Wall Street Journal, probably a great time to slip that in towards the end of the show. But we are going to wrap up the show when I come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you for coming back, everyone. We're going to be wrapping up the big show. Of course, if you missed any of the show and you'd like to hear it in its entirety, you can catch again on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. or always on WGCLradio.com. Next week, Ed Slott, the IRA expert, according to the Wall Street Journal, will be on the show. I've been part of Ed's Elite IRA Advisor Group for about 11 years as part of the founding group that helped it get going, and pretty excited about having Ed part of the program. We went through so much information when I was in Denver last week. I could not wait to have him on to just share some ideas. And these are very practical things that you should, after the show, think, I didn't know that. And they can really help you out. Just some of the tax law that's being reinstated that might be able to help you. Some little pitfalls and when you take required minimum distributions, how to avoid those. All kinds of wealth distribution ideas or wealth transfer ideas to help minimize taxes. It's going to be a really good show. We promise not to get off into the high weeds and get everyone too confused. Really, it's just to have you all very well informed. So that's Ed Slott on next week's show. And then, of course, Rod, this is Mother's Day weekend coming up, so we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about our moms and our wives. So my mom, Rhea, I know you listen occasionally, so I want to wish you a very happy Mother's Day. I love you very much. My stepmother, Jeannie, thank you for being such a good person. And happy Mother's Day to you and my wonderful wife, Misty, who absolutely puts up with me on a daily basis and only rolls her eyes occasionally. When I did my little book launch, I said to everyone, behind every good guy is a woman rolling her eyes. And that's my wife, Misty. So thank you very much, honey. I love you so much. And for all of you out there, Rod, you got to wish your wife and mom a happy Mother's Day.
Well, I wish my wife and mom a happy Mother's Day. Of course, neither one are listening. My wife quit listening after about the first three or four shows I
did. She has to listen to you at home. Why would she listen to you on the radio, too?
Exactly. And then my mom being up north, of course, she could catch it streaming, but that's not my mom. She wouldn't be doing that. So she's not listening, but just in case by some rare circumstance they are, happy Mother's Day to both of them.
And I want all of you out there listening that if you see Rod or I at Hallmark on Saturday buying our cards at the last minute, don't judge us because we'll judge you right back. It's like bumper to bumper, isn't it, Rod? Mother's Day weekend on a Saturday because I haven't had time to do anything. I mean, I've been out doing, you know, stuff like this every night, it seems, every day of the week. So Saturday morning, I'm going to get up, take my son turkey hunting, hoping to bag one for his very first time, and then I'll see it. Hallmark, Hot Rod. Yeah. Sounds good. Everyone, have a great weekend. I'll talk to you again next Thursday night at 6 o'clock here on WGCL. Goodbye, everyone. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.